All right, so we're going to continue our study on Ruth today. Last week we did a little intro to Ruth and studied Ruth 1. Today we'll do Ruth 2 and just kind of want to put this up there. So Ruth 3 for next week, Ruth 4 in conclusion for the week after. So we will push forward here. We're going to do a little overview just quick for anybody who wasn't here last week. So first of all, my wife pointed out that I had some misspellings on the slide. Oprah is not in the book of Ruth, so Orpah is in the book of Ruth. So there were a few mishaps there and some spelling changes. So as we studied last week, this is in the days of the judges, when the judges ruled. These were troubled times, a lot of violence, a lot of crime that took place. And as we noted last week, man did what was right in his own eyes. So at the beginning of the book, in chapter 1, there's a famine in the land, and Elimelech decides to take his family out of Bethlehem, and they head for the country of Moab. So several of you took the time last week to have discussions with me, whether it was in person or over text, and I really appreciate that. As we talked about last week, even though, you know, in Deuteronomy where it didn't mention the Moabites being a forbidden group for them to marry, it does make a reference about 500 years later in Ezra chapter 9, where it said, in chapter 9 verses 1, it says, "After these things had been done, the officials approached me and said, 'The people of Israel and the priests of the Levites have not separated themselves from the peoples of the land with their abominations, from the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they have taken some of their daughters to be wives for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy race has mixed itself with the peoples of the lands. And in the faithlessness, the hand of the officials and chief men has been foremost. And it says, as soon as I heard this, I tore my garment and my cloak and pulled hair from my head and beard and sat appalled." So there is inference here later on in the books that, you know, obviously it was not in their best interest, and it did not make them happy to be a part of the, you know, to intermarry. And we kind of talked a lot about that last week, about how it was definitely discouraged that they should not intermarry between different tribes. So, and I think we can pull some conclusions from this, right? From our everyday life, it is definitely not forbidden for us to marry outside of the church, but we definitely have to be on our A game if we decide to go that route and we meet a partner that is outside of that. There are a lot of things that we as Christians have to take into consideration if we decide to go down that route. And I think that's, you know, that's a warning that we can have to ourselves that we need to take into account if that's the case. So I don't want to get caught up in the weeds of that, but I just wanted to at least readdress it as we started the class. So after coming to Moab, we know that Elimelech died. And then the two sons of Naomi, Chilion and Mahlon, both married Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. They both then passed away. And Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah were all widowed at that point. So Naomi and Ruth decided to return. So Naomi had heard while she was working in the field that that the famine was now gone from Bethlehem. She decided to go back to Bethlehem. Ruth decided to return with her, where Orpah stayed. At this time in chapter 1, Ruth pledged her allegiance to Naomi and to the Lord as well at the same time. So that's at the end of chapter 1, it talks about how Naomi feels that the Lord has punished her, you know, potentially for something that she's not aware of she lost three individuals, her two sons and her husband, in a matter of 10 years from moving when they went to Moab. So she's in a tough spot here. So as we leave and transition from chapter 1 into chapter 2, we see a transition here from that standpoint. And that's where we will start today. So chapter 2, which I've titled the scene 2. You'll see I had scene 1 last week. Scene 2 is here. 3 is in chapter 3. And then scene 4 will be chapter 4. So we're going to read Ruth 2, 1 through 7. Ruth 2, 1 through 7. And can I get a volunteer to read Ruth chapter 2, 1 through 7? Steve, if you don't mind. I've got a microphone coming for you. Ruth 2,
verses 1 through 7.
Yes, sir.
Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, and whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." Excuse me. And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came and has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest."
Thank you. All right, so the chapter starts off with telling us about a man named Boaz. So Boaz is a relative of Elimelech, and Elimelech obviously was Naomi's husband who passed away. It describes him as a worthy man. What does that mean? What is a worthy man? And I notated here that this is the ESV because some other versions use some other terms. It's a worthy man. What's up? Wealthy. A wealthy man. A man of position, maybe a man of power. What's it? A man of respect. Yeah, absolutely. And why do you think that this is mentioned here? What's the importance of them mentioning that? Remembering what Ruth's position is here from what we learned last week. What position is Ruth in at this point? Ruth and Naomi, what position are they in? They have anybody to care for them? They don't have anyone to care for them at this time. So this is kind of setting up. Brother Dick mentioned this last week about the prophecy. We start to really see God's hands in this, how this works out from the very beginning they come to be at this part. So obviously this is going to play into effect later on as they as the story plays out. Okay, So verse two talks about gleaning in the field. So it says in verse two, and Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him." Okay, so that word glean in this chapter is used like 12 times. What does it mean to glean? See? You got a microphone here?
To pick up after. Yeah, basically what happened is as the reapers would go through and cut the heads of grain, sometimes small pieces of the heads would fall on the ground, and those that would glean would come along and pick up the individual kernels to make bread with.
To make bread and things with, yeah, absolutely. So yeah.
I also read where they put them in bundles. Mm-hmm. If they actually forgot and left a bundle, they were forbidden to go back to get the bundle. So it's more than just the scraps.
Yeah.
They have the right. It was God's method of taking care of the poor.
And that's what I was getting at here on that is it was God's method of we'll read here in just a minute in Leviticus 19 about their duty to take care of the poor by this way. But you're absolutely right. There were times that bundles would fall out and they couldn't go back and get them. And this was a way that the Israelites were commanded to take care of the poor, the sojourners, the widows, different people within the that didn't have the means to be able to, get their own food. So as they push through, let's actually turn over to Leviticus. We're going to turn over to Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus chapter 19, and let's read. Let me get a volunteer to read verse 9 and 10. Anybody? Up here. Read Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 through 10.
Verse 9. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge. Neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourn. I am the Lord your God.
So I put in my notes here that every landowner had the responsibility to care for others as a reflection of how God cares for us. That's kind of the correlation that I put to this. So, like we discussed, we talked about Ruth's situation. Why did she need to find someone's favor at this point? As she mentioned in this verse, why does she need to find someone's favor? What's that?
To survive.
Anybody else? Yeah, and I don't even know necessarily if she even she is a widow. She almost qualifies for all of it, right? The entire gamut of everything. She's a sojourner. She has no, as we discussed last week, a woman of her stature was almost less than a slave. I mean, they're less than a slave. She didn't have anybody to take care of her. She didn't have anybody to provide for in any sense. So she was literally desolate, alone.
The work that she was doing was probably the equivalent of picking cotton. You know, it was the oddity that a bundle would fall off. That didn't happen on every row. So she was working very hard for a woman. And I'm sure that's something that Boaz noticed as well.
Noticed, right. And we'll get to that here in just a minute. So, all right. So we know what she had in store for her and what the reason. So she was destined for poverty. She potentially had a long life of homelessness. We'll read here in a minute about a potential abuse that could take place in this type of arena. So she had a rough life ahead of her, not to mention she was a foreigner, right? Where was she from? She was from Moab. So, and how do the Israelites feel about the people from Moab? Not too great. We talked about that last week, right? They did not have a high, their thoughts were not very high of them. So it made her even less. Yeah, I mean, she had all the cards stacked against her. So as I mentioned earlier, we start to see God's hand unfolding in his providence here. As he says in verse 3, she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Right? So what's that tell us here? What's that? Providence. She happened to stumble upon the guy's land who happened to be, as we'll find out here in a little bit, a redeemer of hers, a relative of Naomi's. So obviously we see here that she had, the book talks to us about Boaz from the very beginning to give us as a reader a perspective, but Ruth had no idea about this. She was just working to be able to feed her, and Naomi, to take care of the both of them. She was doing what she committed herself to do, and that's to take care of Naomi and to take care of her. Any comments on that? Okay, so Boaz notices her in the field and asks the men about her. So let's remember that Boaz is the owner of the property. So he ultimately has the say-so as to whether she can glean or not glean in his field. So he could say, no, sorry, she can't glean, right? And once again, as we talked about, she has the card stacked against her. Once he finds out from them that she's a Moabite woman in his field, he could theoretically tell her, no, you can't glean in my field. Was it a responsibility of his to have a foreigner allowed to glean in his field? Yes?
Yes.
To which is where you see the sojourners that we discussed a little bit earlier. Now, some interpretations show that sojourner and foreigner are the same. Like I've read several different things of whether they're the same, whether a sojourner is just somebody who doesn't have a home within the Israelite community and is a poor person, or is it a foreign individual? I'm not going to read too far into this and get hung up in the weeds on that, but you know, there were some commentaries that I read that talked about maybe he didn't have to have a foreigner to have them glean in his field. And given that she was a Moabite woman, you know, did they have the responsibility to do that? You know, that's you know, something for us to also consider whenever it comes into this. So we'll go forward here. All right, so we're going to go to verses 8 through 13. And I'm going to get someone to read 8 through 13. Chapter 2, 8 through 13.
Verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter, don't go and gather grain in another field, and don't leave this one, but stay here close to my female servants. See which field they are harvesting, and follow them. Haven't I ordered the young men not to touch you? When you are thirsty, go and drink from the jars the young men have filled." She fell face down, bowed to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor with you so that you notice me, although I am a foreigner?" Boaz answered her, "Everything you have done for your mother-in-law since your husband's death has been fully reported to me, how you left your father and mother in your native land, and how you came to a people you didn't previously know. May the Lord reward you for what you have done, and may you receive a full reward from the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." "My lord," she said, "I have found favor with you, and for you have comforted me and encouraged your servant, although I am not like one of your female servants."
Okay, so we talked a little bit about this earlier. What happens to women that are in these situations? They're out in the field. What's the probability or possibility of things that can occur?
They're prey.
Yeah.
Among other men.
Absolutely. They are open prey. I mean, they're in the open country. It talks about that over in Deuteronomy chapter 22 about them being in open country and potentially being, you know, women being abused. I mean, it was obviously something that took place in this time that women were preyed upon by men, and obviously just by the context of the verbiage that we see here from the book, it would leave itself to that. So so why was it so important that Ruth kept close to these young women in the field? Outside of what we just talked about. Why was it so important for that? What's that? Could easily see what they didn't collect. Also, what I was thinking about on this, in this day and time, when we think of land in our day and age, we think of, you know, maybe a barbed wire fence, right, that divides the like one landowner from the next landowner. I don't think that that was probably the case. You know, it very well could have been in this time that they may not have been as easily identifiable going from one field to the next. And the fact that if she decided she just wanted to glean and go about her own business, she easily could have, you know, fallen into someone else's land. And then at that point, what's the situation? Back to exactly how she was before. She doesn't have any protection, right? So I was thinking about that as a thought process from maybe the reason that he wanted her to follow the young women was that it made sense that they knew where his field was at. They were a part of his property. Therefore, they were going to stay inside. They knew the bounds of that. Any comments on that? That Boaz had, yeah, and they would have known kind of the process, right? If they were some individuals that had been there and kind of been in the process, you know, they would have known she would, if by following them, she would have been in right in good hands. Okay, so obviously Ruth's character preceded herself, right? What did Boaz talk about? What did Boaz say here? What's that? He knows it. He's going to go into it here in a minute about how he knows what she has done, right? So her character preceded herself, and not to mention because of that. Well, I'm going to go one more. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 15. Genesis chapter 15. All right, chapter 15, 1 through 15, 1 through 5, reads, "After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Fear not, Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. But Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me? For I continue childless, and the heir of my house is Eleazar of Damascus. And Abram said, Behold, you have given me no offspring, and a member of my household will be my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. This man shall not be your heir. Your very own son shall be your heir. And he brought him outside and said, Look toward heaven and number the stars. If you are able to number them, then he said to him, So shall your offspring be. And he believed the Lord, and he counted it to him as righteousness." Okay, so what do you think is going through Boaz's mind as he discusses this full reward in verse 12 that it talks about? And I'll read verse 12 again. Verse 12 says, "The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have to come to take refuge." I got a couple over here.
I think it basically means as if she was an actual Israelite, the reward of being an actual born in country, rather than being considered a Moabite and a foreigner, being considered a natural.
An actual Israelite and receiving the benefits that they got. Right up here. There you go.
The kindness that she had shown to Naomi would be repaid by the Lord. As Jesus said, as oft as you do this unto them, you do it unto me.
There you go.
So that is a principle of God that he required of all his children and all that are his.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for there. This was the full reward that he was hoping that she would receive, right? He wanted he wanted this for us. And, you know, rightfully so. Had she earned it up to this point? I mean, she pledged her allegiance to Naomi. She pledged her allegiance to God at this point. She's doing everything she can at this point to take care of the situation that she's in and do what she can in the situation. I think, I mean, and Boaz sees that, right? He sees that in her just by all the words that have been spoken to him and that all the information that he's been given. He feels at this point that she deserves a full reward, even though what? Even though she's a, in theory, she's a what? She's a foreigner. She's a Moabite. Would she be afforded this type of reward, given her past? No, she would not have. She would not have, because she, in theory, if she was a Moabite, would she be abiding by God's principles? Would she be following his commandments? She would not be, right?
And I also think that Boaz himself saw himself as a recipient of God's blessings.
Yeah.
You know, he could have said, because of all the good that you have done, I am going to reward you. Mm-hmm. But he kind of looks at himself as a pass-through. You know, you've come under the wings of the Lord, and he is acting as those wings in a sense, you know, which we all are God's hands and feet and have some of that responsibility too. So I kind of like how he phrases that, and he's like, this is the Lord's doing, and he's willingly participating in that role.
Yeah, I think you're skipping to my key points for today. No, that's exactly what I think that's exactly what is happening here. Is Boaz is embodying Christ, you know, or God's not Christ, but God's image here and his characteristics here. He's utilizing those same characteristics, the, you know, mercy, kindness, all these different things that God embodies. He's essentially embodying that in this story. Any other comments on that? Okay, so do you think at this point, does it seem that Boaz knows that he will be the answer to this? Is there a reflection? Is there context within this that Boaz feels like he knows that he's going to be the one to do this? Yeah, exactly. I don't think he does. I don't think there's any context here that would. So I think just like Ruth so happened to wander onto his field, he also had no idea that this was in. He was doing this out of the goodness of his heart because of what he felt was necessary at that time, and what he felt like Ruth deserved because of what she's going through, what her and Naomi have gone through up to this point. I think he just has mercy on and has the kindness within his heart to be able to, you know, fulfill that role of what he's about to. Yeah.
So when you say that she just wandered off onto his field, you're kind of taking away God's part in this, because she said, let me find somebody who will permit me to gather grain. And he was a good man, and he was doing the law. Mm-hmm. So God was using him to help Ruth, and Ruth was following God. So God was working with this situation.
Yeah, I definitely think that God's hand was in this from the very beginning, from the beginning of this.
Yeah, because when people are doing what God wants them to do, he will, this is the providence, he brings things together to work for everybody's benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have to keep
Especially in this scenario, right? Terrible situation that he's obviously, and that's one of our key takeaways from last week, is even in terrible situation, terrible times, terrible things that happen, he can make good out of it.
You know, this is a beautiful story. God's the main character.
Yeah.
And there's the real beauty.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. God is the main character in this, and we see that from from the very beginning, from the famine happened in the land in Bethlehem and them going to Moab, as Brother Dick mentioned last week. I mean, we see his hand in this from the beginning and throughout the entire story. Yeah, over here. He's running.
I kind of always thought of it differently. I kind of thought that he knew, based on the context of the servant telling him that she was Naomi's daughter-in-law and that her husband had died, and then he said that he has heard what she had done for her mother-in-law since the death of her husband, and maybe he didn't know that he was in the line, but I think it doesn't change the fact that even if he knew or didn't know, he didn't have to redeem her.
No.
But I think I just tend to think of his choice as knowingly protecting her and choosing to redeem her, but either way, he didn't have to. So maybe it doesn't change the story. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the narrative probably stays the same either way you look at it, right? The narrative, I mean, his kindness, his goodness goes, I mean, well beyond anything he may or may not have known. You know, either way, he didn't have to do it, right?
Yeah, and it's not just a history lesson. I mean, this is one of those where he was not prohibited for doing good to people who were not Jewish.
Not, yeah.
We have that same thing. Our first responsibility, we understand, starts in the church.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the end of our responsibility or our ability to give.
Yeah, I think that there's beautiful application with this story, you know, in our own lives, right? Anybody else? Okay. So this type of servant that is mentioned here, do these type of servants, like the normal servants that is mentioning here, do they get this type of gratitude? I see most of you. Yeah, over here. I see most of you shaking your head no as he brings the mic over there. He went above and beyond what needed to take place or was his requirement under the law to do this.
Though she was not an Israelite, she was part of his family because he was related to Elimelech.
Yep.
His servants managed evidently this special field of maidens, and it appears that his instructions to her are special in that do not rebuke her, watch after her. And so you find a family that has received kindness from Naomi and has married relationships to Elimelech, his sons, and you see him acting on the basis of the kind of heart that he had, according to the words that same words that had been demonstrated to the heart of Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see this pattern developing, and yes, I think his efforts are special, and I think he's clearly motivated to extend kindness.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, that's what we see, and we see the kind of heart that God wants us to see because it's the kind of heart that God has.
Yeah, and let's be honest, I think that has a lot to do with why Ruth stayed with Naomi, right? It's because of that type of character that Ruth obviously saw in Naomi from the very beginning, that, look, I need to be a part of this because this is something special. Absolutely.
Example created a follower of the same kind of characteristic the Lord wants us to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone else on that? Okay, so we'll go to 14 through 16 here. So we got about 10 minutes. Okay, we'll go back over here. Ruth chapter 2, 14 through 16. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread, and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So obviously we see here that Boaz's, he continues to show favor and go above and beyond for Ruth here of what was required to him. He even invites her to dinner. Was this would this be customary for him to invite a Moabite woman to dinner? No, right? That would not be customary. That is definitely above and beyond what would have been required to him.
I think it's pretty obvious from their first encounters that he's already smitten with her.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, like you said, above and beyond, and the love bug has got him.
And yeah, I think about that, like when I see, when you see that he walked up to the field, and he obviously picked her out, that, hey, what is she in the field? Where is she from? He starts asking questions right away. I kind of get that context in my mind as well, that he definitely noticed her from the beginning. At least that's how I read into it. Maybe that's like just the love story portion of it. But so he goes above and beyond. He even goes to the point of telling the young men to leave extra bundles for Ruth. So we talked. So this is them. What does he mean by this? By leaving extra bundles? We hit on it just a little bit earlier.
Drop some things for her.
Whoops, right? Whoops, I dropped some. What do we talk about? Brother Rob, you mentioned that earlier about if they dropped it, what happened? Couldn't go back and get it, right? Could not go back, and that plays perfectly into this story. So he's going above and beyond, and just like we talked about earlier in Leviticus 19, 9 through 10, where it gives his duty here, this is above and beyond anything that he was required to do at this point. I think you mentioned, Trish, that you could see this here. You could see his, I think he's googly-eyed over a little bit, probably. But, all right, let's go to the last portion of this, last section of this. Can I get somebody to read 17 through 23? 17 through 23. Ready? The gem of the... And we'll really start to see the story really come together here, 17 through 23.
Okay, so Ruth gathered again in the field until evening. She beat out what she had gathered, and it was about 26 quarts of barley. She picked up the grain and went into the town, where her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She brought out what she had left over from her meal and gave it to her. Her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you gather barley today, and where did you work? May the Lord bless the man who noticed you." Ruth told her mother-in-law whom she had worked with and said, "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz." Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May the Lord bless him, because he has not abandoned his kindness to the living or to the dead." And Naomi continued, "The man is a close relative. He is one of our family redeemers." Ruth, the Moabitess, said, "He also told me, 'Stay with my young men until they have finished all of my harvest.'" So Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, Ruth, "My daughter, it is good for you to work with his female servants, so that nothing will happen to you in another field." So Ruth stayed close to Boaz's female servants and gathered grain until the barley and the wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Okay, so, all right, we got 5 minutes. I got to blow through here so we get to the end. All right, so we see here that she collected an ephah of barley. So an ephah is roughly 5.5 gallons of barley that she, it's like 22 liters worth of barley that she gathered, which is roughly around a 1 to 2 week supply, depending on how they rationed it for the two women. Would that be a normal day's gathering? No, right? I mean, we talked about earlier, a lot of times it's just the grains that they're, that, you know, little small grains that they're picking up. This was a large amount. And we see that in verse 19 from Naomi's response to this of, you know, she's surprised at how much that she has gathered at this point. So what does Naomi mean when she talks about the kindness to the living and to the dead?
In Naomi's eyes, she was dead. She'd said to herself, I'm old, I can't have children. In her eyes, she was as good as dead.
Yeah.
So I think she was referring to herself and to the living. I think she was talking about Ruth.
About Ruth at that point.
Yeah. I think that's a good point that Steve made. That's not where my mind went to her dead husband, mm-hmm. and her sons.
Yeah.
That by showing the kindness to Ruth, and by extension, Naomi, because he's letting Ruth glean all of this, knowing that she's providing for herself and for Naomi, that by taking care of them, it's honoring, you know, her husband's memory and that relationship.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is multifaceted as to what it means here. Brother Pope, did you have something? Did you have something? Okay, I thought I saw your hand raised. Sorry. Okay. No, so I think at this point, you're right. It's multifaceted. Both of you hit the nail on the head here. She, both situations make sense here. So we talked about this earlier. Boaz embodies God's character by his kindness. We kind of jumped ahead on this, but this shows that within this portion of within this entire story of his kindness, his lovingness, his mercy that he has in the story here. So what is a redeemer or kinsman in this context? And I gave you some pointers here. What is a redeemer or kinsman in this context?
There were several ways that the Redeemer was used. The word in Hebrew is the goel.
Goel.
And the goel was someone who, if you got yourself in debt so badly that you were enslaved, it was the obligation of your next of kin to be able to get you out of that situation. It generally was it would reside first on your father's brother, and then it worked its way down through close relationships.
Yep.
But they would get you out of slavery. They would, if in the case of Mahlon and Chilion, they were people who had died, and therefore the property that they had in Bethlehem would be something that could pass on
down to
them. They apparently, from what we read about in Ruth, the laws concerning the Redeemer and the laws about levirate marriage came together, so that someone would marry someone, but that took upon them an obligation, so that the first child born would be the child of the first dead husband.
Yep.
So there were several things in this idea, but basically it carried with it the idea in the context of Ruth of redeeming someone from the poverty that they were in, and putting them in a situation to where they the property of their dead husband that would revert in the year of Jubilee to them, and the wife that was associated with it would be something that would revert to Boaz.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think this goes back to exactly what we're talking about with the gift of the living and the dead, and then the obligation to be able to take that on of, you know, taking the inheritance having the right to marry the widow, but also bringing, you know, bringing that, continuing to carry that name that is, you know, that is there. So really fast, I'll go through this as good as it pops up. So I think some of the key takeaways from this portion versus what we had last week are very similar, where we see it shows that God's people continue to experience his power, wisdom, and love. God's providence can be used in any circumstance, no matter, we can't count that out in any situation. Never, don't think that God's providence can't show up in any situation. Boaz leads by example, and as we talked about, he embodied God's character. He was honest, faithful, kind, trustworthy, merciful. He took care of that. He took care of that, and is a great example for us as Christians to utilize those same characteristics in our everyday life.